pretty surprised this morning that all the front seats are empty. So I noticed we had beans for breakfast. Those sitting in the back seats are gonna catch some of the fruit of the beans for breakfast. You find the front seats a much better place to sit this morning. Remember, if you do smell such things, draw my nose. And it's not the smell disturbs you, but you disturb the smell. I don't care. See, most people are here. I hope they are anyway. If not in body and spirit. So today's Dhamma talk, I'm going to talk about some of the other ways of meditating. This is giving a little bit of variety to your practice, because again, after 3 or 4 days, your breath might be getting present moment. It's nice to give it something else. Really, all I'm doing is just encouraging you to do exactly the same thing, but just give it a different colour, a different flavouring, and so you think you're actually doing something different, but really you're always doing just the same thing. Throughout the whole of this meditation retreat, there's only just one way of practice. That's the Third Noble Truth practice. Sometimes people ask about Samatha Vipassana and the two types of meditation. That's not the two types of meditation according to how I understand the teachings of the Buddha and the way to peace. The way of meditation is the Third Noble Truth. Letting go, renouncing, contentment, giving up, fleeing. All these beautiful words. And so we're just going to talk about a few other ways of doing that today. So we're actually doing the same thing, only dressing it up slightly differently. I've already mentioned a couple of things you could be doing. Like last night, I mentioned like meditating backwards. If you are watching the breath, you're just playing around. Breathe out first, then breathe in. And then breathe out, and then breathe in. It's fascinating that when you play around with the psychology of the mind, you're playing around with conditioning. It's just that we get so conditioned looking at the breath goes in first and then it goes out, that just doing it slightly different makes it a little bit more interesting. And especially you can do that backwards meditation or backwards breath meditation, especially if you introduce what we call like the counting meditation. All of you who are good at counting, I know there's a couple of accountants here, who are good at figures, you can do counting meditation, which goes like this. There's many different methods, but this is the one which I use. You breathe in and you say to yourself one. You breathe out, you say to yourself one. Breathing in, two. Breathing out, two. Breathing in, three. Breathing out, three. Why are you all paying attention now? It's interesting, isn't it? Because we pay attention because this is something interesting. When we actually do some counting, it gives us something to do. It's more interesting for us. Breathing out, four. You're in four, out four, in five, out five. Breathing in six, out six, breathing in seven, breathing out seven, breathing in eight, breathing out eight, breathing in nine, breathing out nine. I usually go up to nine because in Thailand nine is a lucky number. If you come from Singapore, you can go up to eight because eight is a lucky number. But whatever, if you breathe in 1, 1, 2, 2, 3, 4, 4, 5, 5, 6, 6, 7, 7, 8, 8, 9, 9. And when you finish nine, you go back to start again, breathing in 1, out 1, in 2, out 2, in 3, out 3, in 4, out 4, in 5, out 5, in 6, out 6, in 7, out 7, in 8, out 8, you go up to 8 this time. And then you go back to 1, in 1, out 1, in 2, out 2, 3, 3, 4, 4, 5, 5, 6, 6, this time you go up to 7, in 1, out 7. And then you go back to 1 again, in 1, out 1, in 2, out 2, in 3, out 3, in 4, out 4, in 5, out 5, in 6, out 6, to 6. Then up to 5, then up to 4. Then in 1, out 1, in 2, out 2, in 3, out 3, just up to 3. Then up to 2, in 1, out 1, in 2, out 2. And then lastly, in 1, out 1. And you finish one whole cycle. Now people love to do this, because we've been trained actually to set ourselves a goal, have something to do, and so that we can complete. And we think, ah, oh, it's really good, I can do that. That's why it's an interesting type of meditation. Just to play around, but don't do it too much. Otherwise, you get into counting all the time, you give yourself a headache, and it'd be just like going back to work counting out all the figures. So this is only just to freshen up the mind every now and again. However, it's sometimes quite interesting because there you are, you're counting 1, 1, 2, 2, 3, 3. And before you know it, 17, 17, 18, 18. You completely lost your mindfulness and you're way off somewhere. And it happens that way because automatically we keep on going. And if we lose our mindfulness or alertness, what we're doing, then we forget. And that's a sign that your mindfulness isn't all that strong. Sometimes it happens, you know, in one out, one into four out, four. Where the heck am I? And if you don't know where you are, whether you're in the 1 to 7 or the 1 to 8 or the 1 to 4, you don't know where you are, you have got to start right from the very beginning again. Even a small amount of doubt right from the beginning, don't cheat. And it really shows you just how much we want to achieve and do things that we actually do sort of bend the truth sometimes. At this point, I'm sure that's a 7. I give the benefit of the doubt. Carry on. Don't do that. Just actually do it really nicely and clearly. Because if you can do that, you've actually watched 45 breaths, one after the other. You've been there at every time, at every breath. And that shows you you've got a bit of mindfulness going with the breath. But again, don't do it for too long, because sometimes people have done it for the whole hour and they still can't get the full cycle. They just get a headache and they get really fed up. It's just a way of giving your mind something to do. Because we've been trained always to do things, and because in our world we're always active, this is a way of giving the mind something to play with, something to chew on, like giving a dog a bone. So you can chew on something, see if you can actually do the counting. And you can do it many other ways, any counting, but that's actually one of the nice ways of doing it. It just gives a focus to the mind. And you're watching the breath, you're counting, you know you're watching the breath, you finish the counting, 45 breaths, you've been with 45 breaths in a row, you've got some good meditation on the breath. And if you've done it one cycle or 2 cycles, 3 cycles at the very most, then you let go and you just stay with the breath. It just makes it easier. And it gives you some reward. Even though I say you shouldn't expect anything, there's no rewards in this meditation, just let it go, give, not expecting anything back. Yes, but the nature of our mind is we're not fully enlightened yet, and we do expect something, and we do want something. But this is a little way of giving your defilements a dog to chew, give your defilements a bone to chew on. So that's one way, doing the counting meditation. One of the other lovely ways of meditation we've been talking about is a walking meditation. And I haven't really mentioned that in detail yet, how you walk. I like to do 2 types of walking meditation. One is actually for calming the mind down, and the other one is actually for reflecting. And sometimes that reflecting is quite useful when we do our meditation retreat, because sometimes the mind needs to just mull over what's been happening. Not mulling over what happened in your work or what's going to happen when you leave here, but just reflecting on the meditation itself, or maybe that's something which happened in the talk. So some experience which you had in meditation. So when I'm actually reflecting, actually just to make sure that I know what I'm doing, I put my hands in a different position. When I'm reflecting, I put my hands around my back. And I'm walking and I'm like contemplating. I might be contemplating some aspects of the teachings or contemplating something or other. You know, what happened in that last meditation, what the problem was, or whether it was a great one, whether it's not such a great one. So I put my hands behind my back, just because it's a different posture. And having trained myself that way, that when my hands are around my back, it's a psychological signal, and now you can contemplate. And if I'm going to do like quieting meditation, I just put my hands around my front. And that's just like a psychological signal, that now's the time for not thinking, for calming things down. Sometimes when you calm things down, sometimes you can do like a no expectation meditation. You don't know what's going to happen, you don't expect anything, you're just in this moment, you've got no orders, no commands, no goals, you don't know which way your foot's going to go next, completely in the present moment, and just see where you end up. That's a very nice meditation. It's just 1 step at a time meditation. You're not walking on a meditation track, 1 step at a time, you're just aware and see what happens next. See if you can really let go of all your plans. So even the next step, you don't know where it's going to go, left, right, straight ahead, or backwards, or stay still. It's just seeing what happens, meditation. Just being aware, present moment, seeing what happens next. That's an interesting meditation because it's training you to stop all this planning business. A lot of times when we walk, we see over there, that's where I'm going to walk to, and off we go. And even you're not really here, you're already there when you sort of first start planning. So you're not really where you are. Even when you're on a meditation walking path, where you go backwards and forwards, sometimes we're over here, we're at the end already, because our mind is looking over there, that's where we want to be. But with this type of walking meditation, you're not aiming to go anywhere. You don't even know where you're going to end up. You're just going to walk this one step and see what happens next. Your mind's open to whatever experience comes in this moment. Whether it's the sound of the birds, you're free to listen to them. If the mind has had enough of the bird, they can make another step. If it wants to feel the wet grass under its feet, you just stay there and linger with the wet grass, knowing what it feels like. He'll walk towards the sun and feels the warm sun on his on your face. You'll allow that to happen. One moment at a time. Not going anywhere. No plans. Nothing to achieve. Not trying to gain something. Not trying to do this in order to get jhanas or get enlightened. You're not doing it for any reason at all. You're just happening, that's all. So you really are being a passenger on your walking meditation in the garden. You're not walking at all, because the mind is making one step at a time, and you're just being there, enjoying every moment. That's a very lovely walking meditation to do, because that cuts against all the planning, and all the, I do this to get something out of it, type meditation. So try that one, it's very liberating, very freeing, and it's, my goodness, it's no trouble at all. If you're feeling painful or sick, there's no hindrance, no burden anymore. You're taking yourself out of all your cages. You just see what happens next. You're free. So try doing that, and that's a lovely way of just opening up the mind. Especially if you've been meditating, you're getting frustrated, or you're getting tired, or you're thinking, oh my goodness, it's the third day. Is it third day or fourth day? It's the now day. It's the now day already, and I still haven't got jhana. Oh. So just stop all of that by just doing the one step at a time, walking meditation. No goals, don't know where you're going to go. Don't know where you're going to end up. Fortunately, we've got like a fence all around here, so you can't end up too far away. In Northwich. Yeah. So you can't go too far off. So try that one. But if you want to do the more formal walking meditation, that's where you get a path. So it can be the corridors, it can be out in the grass there, any place, and you put just two ends to that path. You can either use two trees or take your shoes and put your shoes down, or have some marker places, and then you just walk backwards and forwards between those two marker places. Again, you're not going anywhere. You're just going backwards, you're going forward, you end up where you started, which is what life is all about. We start out in nappies and we end up in nappies. Anyone who's worked with old people, you know that's what you end up in. You have to wear nappies when you're off. You start with nappies, you end up with nappies. So just like the walking meditation path, where you start, there you end up afterwards. The cycle of life and death. So you're not going anywhere, you're just coming back again. So when you're doing walking meditation, you just put your sight about 2 meters in front of you. You keep your eyes open simply because you want to make sure you don't trip over anything. Or, you know, you don't stumble. So the eyes are just looking 2 meters ahead, just on a patch of grass or a patch of carpet. It's not all that interesting. It's not all that distracting. But at least it gives you the sense of safety that you're not going to trip over something. If you try with your eyes closed, there's always that little fear that, have I done the right number of steps? Is something in front of me? Am I going to hit the wall or go through the plate glass or whatever? So keep your eyes open, but just look down a couple of meters. If you're doing contemplation, you can move put your hands in a different position. If you're doing quiet meditation, put your hands in a certain position. So the body and the mind come together, you know this is for quieting things down. And as you start your walking meditation, I did mention this during the talks in Armidale and also Nolamara. Tell yourself what you're supposed to be doing at the beginning of the meditation. Give some instructions to the mind. Say, I'm meditating here for calm. If you're going to contemplate, I'm meditating for contemplation. So let the mind know very clearly what it's supposed to be doing. So it just sets a direction for the next 30 minutes, an hour, 2 hours, whatever. Then you just start walking. And you make the present moment the most important thing to start with walking meditation. So you make sure that you don't go thinking about what's happened next. You don't go planning what's going to happen in the future. You just make the present moment. So you can actually, a nice way of, especially if you take your shoes off, is actually to feel the grass underneath you, or feel the carpet underneath you. Because that feeling is always in the present moment. Become sensitive to the now. Or if you're out there in the garden, it can be the wind or the sun, or even the sound of the bird. Just sensitive to those things. And those are things which happen in the moment. Even if there's an ache or a pain in the body, you're sensitive to those things in the moment. So you make that the main thing, just present moment awareness. And you don't concern yourself what's going to happen next or what happened before. There's no goals, because all the goals are in the future. Just now, now, now. And because you've already decided, I'm going to walk up to there, and I'm going to walk back again, I'm going to walk up to there, and I'm going to walk back again, there's not really much you have to think about. You're free to allow the mind to settle in the present moment. And especially those of you who have trouble sitting down, you've got bad backs, or you've got bad legs, or you've got bad stomachs, or bad something or other. There's always something bad in here. If you've got bad something or other, then that's a nice way of allowing the body to have some exercise and allowing those things actually to work their way out of the body. A bit of exercise is great for aches and pains and stiffness. So just walk backwards and forwards and it's comfortable. And as you get into the present moment, the next thing to do is to take away the attention of the commentary. Because we think so much that we always have this inner commentary going on, giving a running commentary to life, giving our opinions of names and judgments about what's going on. When you become aware of that, you just see how much rubbish that is. Just, you know, what a moronic thing our thinking mind is sometimes. That's one of the reasons why any monks who can read your mind will not dare to do that, because, oh my goodness, not again, the same old rubbish. It's like, you know, watching the television, some of these silly soap operas. That's what goes on in most people's minds. It's like soap opera minds. Nothing really interesting in there. Would you really want your mind to be read? All the rubbish which goes into it. You think, oh my goodness, you'd be embarrassed if someone could read your mind. So that's why the monks, if they could do it, they don't do it. Just out of the avoidance of suffering. So, you quieten your mind down, make it nice and peaceful, and just, you know, stop listening to all that sort of stuff, and just become more sensitive, more open to the moment. So be peaceful, listen, feel, just know silently. It's a much more full knowing, it's a much more total listening, because you're fully open. Because every time you talk back, you're not really listening. Like every time a thought comes into your mind during this talk, you're not really listening to the words which I'm saying. And this is actually why that people don't learn about life, because they're not open. Open must be in silence. And after a while, you're just walking backwards and forwards, just being in the moment. It's quite easy to be silent, because the garden out there, or even the nice quiet cave-like tunnels and the corridors, they're very pleasant to walk on. Not too cold, not too hot, you don't have to worry about too many things. Just have to really rest and let go and enjoy it, just walking. Not going anywhere, just being the walking. And as soon as you get into the silence, you start to really enjoy this walking. It becomes peaceful, it becomes nice. And if you really want to take it deeper, then you start putting all your attention. Once you're silent enough, once you're in the present moment enough, you put all your attention on the feelings in the lower part of the legs. Just as the left foot moves, how does it move? Which part of the foot leaves the ground first? Is it the heel, the toes, the ball of the foot, the side of the foot? And how does it move? My foot, when it moves up and it moves backwards a little bit before it goes forward. So just notice the way you walk. Don't force the walking. You find when you start watching, you tend to start to walk unnaturally at first. Again, it shows you that just when we start to look at things, the knower and the doer tend to walk together. And we know something, then we start doing it as well. And then it becomes unnatural. It's the same way when sometimes people start watching the breath. when they start knowing the breath, they start doing the breath as well, it becomes uncomfortable. But if they just leave it alone, you just walk naturally, you just breathe naturally, there's no problem at all. Just like, you know, the old trick of, no, can you notice the feeling in your throat, the saliva in your mouth now? No, it's in your attention, it's very uncomfortable, and you can never actually swallow it properly now until you forget about it. When you know something, you tend to get involved and mess it all up. You just leave it alone, things go quite smoothly. So, first of all, when you start to notice the feeling in your feet, you find that you walk unnaturally. It's a little test of you, just to be able to know without getting involved. And allow the feet to move as they normally would. And as they move, as they normally do, as they move forward, what's the first part of the foot which touches the ground? What's the next? What's the last part? And how does it feel? You know, the feeling in the feet pressing against the ground. And what's the way it moves from one leg to another? The feel of the other foot so that can move out. You start watching all the movements in the feet. As the mindfulness gets strong, because you're not doing anything, because the energy is going into knowing, it's the same old thing, but it works. The movement in the feet starts to become very interesting and very beautiful, and you get quite obsessed. Beautifully obsessed in just noticing all these amazing things going on when you walk. And usually what happens is that people start walking slowly at that time, once they really sort of start to notice, because there's too much going on to go fast. You miss too much. However, it doesn't really matter. This happens naturally. Don't try and walk slowly. As someone said last night, you know, we're not going to have a race at the end to see who walks the slowest. But certainly, I remember that some of my experiences when I started walking meditation, even in this monastery in Bangkok, I used to do walking meditation just before lunch, and it was on the veranda of the main hall, which was maybe about 20 meters long, if it was that, maybe 18 meters. And it took me half an hour to walk from one end to the other end. Because there was a grandfather clock which would chime a quarter hours. That's how I knew. And it would take me half an hour to walk back again. It took me 1 hour to walk maybe, you know, 35 meters. Exactly, it wasn't forced at all. You start meditating, I did a sitting meditation first of all. Then you start walking, you get really so involved in the movement of the feet. It's really, really pleasant. You're in your own little world, like in a shell. And it's so peaceful and so nice. I remember one experience, I was really getting into it, just walking backwards and forwards, having a great old time. And unfortunately I forgot that there was a dana, there was some ceremony that morning, I had to go early instead of the usual time. And so, because I was late, they sent a monk to come and get me. And then this monk sort of appeared. Or rather that I sensed he appeared, but he was right next to my ear, and he said, Brahma Wansa, you've got to come to Adana. And it was like listening to someone a million miles away. Brahma Wansa, you've got to come to Adana. I remember just hearing and then contemplating the sound. And then realizing it was something important, and then I remember like moving my head as fast as I possibly could. There's so many interesting things going on when you move your head. It took me, no, I'm actually speeding it up as I'm doing this now. And I turned around to you. And I said, pardon? And I'm not exaggerating, that's what actually happened. It was just so hard to come out of that cool space and do something. You're just so peaceful and so soft and so lovely. It just, you know, naturally, it takes a hard pull for actually to pull yourself out. And that's actually what happens when you get still. You have a lovely old time, just walking there and having a great old time. You don't really care about anything else in the world. It's just so wonderful. These are states of samadhi, states of peace. You're just so still and you've got lots of energy and it's so content. You don't want anything else in the whole world. It's happy just to be there, just, you know, with your legs moving. So that's another way of meditating. Again, when I describe what happens, sometimes people get desire, oh, when is that going to happen to me? And you deliberately go slow. And you sort of try and fake it sometimes. You know, you just imagine what it might be like. And just, you know, somebody comes and calls you, and you sort of start doing it, sets up and around it. But don't fake it. Allow it to come naturally. If you're walking fast, walk fast. If you walk medium, walk medium. Allow it to happen naturally. But hopefully that when you settle down, you'll notice that things start to go slow and the whole world slows down. And as it slows down, the whole world becomes so beautiful. And just walking there and just without care in the world, just one step, even one part of the step, even one fragment of this movement is just more than enough to satisfy you. And that's actually what you can look forward to when you meditate. You can't go much deeper than that in walking meditation. You can't get into jhanas on walking meditation, most people anyway. But Ajahnyana Dhammo in Thailand tells me there was one monk who could get into jhana when he did walking meditation. However, it is not recommended. Because he went in jhana meditation, completely lost all consciousness of his body and kept on walking into things. There were bruises and bumps and cuts on his face and body. Because when you get into the jhana, your attention is completely inside, and you can't feel the body at all. You're not unaware, you're just unaware of the body. Your awareness is completely with, very bright, with the bliss inside. You can't feel your body. So it's not a good thing. But usually people can't do that. That's an exceptional monk who does that. But most of the time, you just, that's as far as you go. And then if you get very peaceful, enjoy it. And then very slowly walk back to your sitting posture or just sit where you are, in the garden or in the corridor there, just find a nice little quiet corner and sit and carry on. And allow that calm, that peace, which you've built up in walking meditation, just to flow into the sitting meditation. See as I describe it now, present moment awareness, silence, feelings in the feet, it's like the feelings in the breath. How's the breath going? How does the breath start? Is the beginning of an in-breath? Is that different than the end of an in-breath? In the middle, is the feeling somehow different or is it all the same? Which breath is longer, the in-breath or the out-breath? Is the feeling has got the greatest strength in the middle or the beginning or just at the end? Does it sort of go up and then suddenly fall down, or is it like one of these sine curves? Breathing in and then it slowly diminishes. What about the gaps between the breaths? Is that the gap between the in-breath and the out-breath the same as the gap between the out-breath or the in-breath? Or is one longer than the other? So you start to get an interest in this breath. As you get still, does the breath change? How does it change? What is this breath anyway? So you don't just watch the breathing in, breathing out. You become interested in it, it becomes fascinating. And you become an expert on the breath. In the same way that some people, they can taste a wine and they know what vineyard, they know what year, they even know what worker trampled the grapes. Whatever it is, they've got such a... Maybe I'm going to extremes there. But at least, they've got such a refined palate. They know all these things because they're an expert on the taste of wine. If you did give wine to me, because I'm not supposed to have some anyway, but I would know a thing about it. However, when you really get into these things, you become a connoisseur of the breath. This is a vintage breath. This is so nice. Because you get to know your deep knowing through watching. So this is actually how we link the breath meditation to the walking meditation. Some people do standing meditation as well. That can be okay, but sometimes it can become a bit painful for your legs if you don't get peaceful very quickly. Sometimes people are afraid of falling over, so at least don't do standing meditation next to a glass door. But what you're doing either standing is being in the present moment again. Being silent and just being with the feelings. And just letting go of the whole world. The laying down meditation we talked about last night. Again, give some distance between you and your pillow when you do lying down meditation. And that way you don't fall asleep. So those are actually types of meditation which you can do. This is there's other types of meditation you can do, and one of the other nice types of meditation which we'll teach this morning is like doing body contemplation. When we do body contemplation, we just actually, it's more like a body feeling meditation. We just start to notice all the feelings in our body. Usually we start by the furthest part of our body, the toes, because usually most people don't give any attention to their toes. We scratch our ear, we can scratch our nose, but we never actually go look down there because it's such a long way from our head. And so these portable toes get neglected. And the portable things down here, neglected little toes, hardly ever get any attention from you. So you give your toes. Start from the little toe, first of all. And is my little toe happy? Is it comfortable? Care for these little things. And all you need to do is ask that part of the body, are you happy? Are you at peace? How do you feel down there? And then that little toe will answer you. And sometimes you've got it squashed against some other part of your body, or it's squashed against the floor. No wonder it's relaxed. You give a little bit of kindness and they'll smile back at you. You can make it nice and easy. You feel that toe. And when it's nice and comfortable, you can let it go and go to the next one. Little by little, you go up the body, toe by toe. You know, the ball of the feet, the sole of the feet, the arches of the feet, the top of the feet. Everyone, you feel it. Ask it, are you happy? Are you at peace? Because asking that question brings you awareness of that part of the body. And you slowly move up the body and to your ankles, to the calves of the feet. Go as slowly as you wish. Pause at every moment, at every part of the body, to relax it, give it peace, give it a sense of like, in Thai, like sabai, which feels so good. Only when it feels so good and nice and rested, you move on to the next part. If there's any part of the body that's very, very tense and lots of pain, just like bathe it with a sense of ease. You can imagine it like a sponge which is all squashed and twisted. You can imagine that sponge all twisted and squashed, opening up, expanding. A lovely way of dealing with pain in the body is actually to expand it. Very often we're so afraid of pain, we actually squash it up into a ball, a solid ball of fire, because we resist pain. But here we want to expand it. As we expand it, it becomes diluted. We expand and expand and expand and it becomes as light as a cloud. Sure, the pain is going over the whole universe, because it's spreading out, it gets less intense. And eventually it spreads out so far that it's got so diluted it doesn't exist anymore. It's like spreading out pain. So in tension you're actually spreading out. That's called relaxing it. You're opening things out rather than closing things and trying to lock them away because you don't like them. Expanding them, opening. You move all that up your body, you know, to your legs and to your poor bottom. Your poor bottom's got a hammering on this retreat. It's been squashed against the chair, squashed against the cushion, squashed against the stool. And sometimes no wonder this poor bottom is very sore. So look after this poor bottom. You know, buttock by buttock, left buttock, how are you? Nice to make your acquaintance again. And just with your mind at ease. You know, the left buttock, and ease the right buttock as you go up and out to the waist and the stomach. And any organs inside which are having a hard time, if this gas is building up from the beans, remember what? Let go. But not in here. Expand it throughout the whole universe, but not this room. So yeah, letting it go. But no, whatever pain or feeling you have, just ask yourself, that little part of the body, how are you feeling? And then be kind to it. It's like kindness, letting go, being at peace. A lot of times, because we don't really ask our body, how are you? That's why we don't know what's going on down there. Every part of the body, you just ask a whole lot. You know, your shoulders, your elbows. You go up one by one through the body, right to your fingers. Even the little finger, the tip of the finger, how do you feel? You feel like the tingling feeling there. You just calm it down, see if you can make it a bit more peaceful. Before you go up to things like the shoulders. And then you go up the back of the head. Now go up the vertebrae, because the vertebrae, you know, the spinal cord and all that, is just full of a lot of tension. That's a pathway for pain or happiness. So you really look after that. It's just like you're massaging it. And giving it lots of peace. And lots of energy. Lots of, you know, good vibes. You go right to the top of your head. And the crown of the head, what you feel is the topmost part of your head. And there actually you can do a little visualization of opening up that hole at the top of your head. You know when you're sweeping rubbish, you've got to sweep it out somewhere, so sweep it out the top of your head. Okay, all that rubbish, all that pain, all of that sort of defilements, all of my guilt, all of my frustration, just sweep it out the top of your head. Imagine it going like smoke out into the universe, gone. And then close that hole pretty quickly before it's gone. And then move the attention to the front of the face. There's always a lot of tension over there in the front of the face. For most people, especially if you've been trying hard, you know, you get all these sort of stress marks on your face. And then allow all the face, just feel it, just like open up and really relax. And you finish off around by your mouth. Just make it so relaxed. And when it's nice and relaxed, just the edge of the mouth just turn up. And end with a smile. And then you can actually let the body go and then go and do some breath meditation or something. It's a great exercise, one, in mindfulness, two, in present moment awareness and silence. It's pretty silent. I mean, you're having a few words there, but not too many. It's a great little meditation to really get you in to still states of mind. Because if you just do the breath meditation, the same old breath meditation again and again, you get bored after a while. If you don't get pumped in the best meditation. So this is actually giving the mind something else to do, and it's great fun. And as you become more aware and alert of your body, it's great sort of how you can ease the sicknesses in your body, because a lot of sicknesses come because of lack of body awareness. We don't know what to do with them because of lack of body awareness. If we become more aware of our body, you can actually do things with them. I remember this one monk in our monastery had a bad back, and there's some book which he got, and it just said, well, when you become aware of some muscles in the body, you can actually start to exercise them just through thought, and that way you can actually strengthen some muscles and you can lessen your back pain. It worked for him anyway, so you can imagine actually how that works. You get aware of some parts of your body you've never actually paid much attention to, and with that awareness you can actually start to flex those muscles and strengthen them, move them, get things going again, just through awareness. Paying attention. I think it may be, I think this is probably the case, that when you're aware of something, then your pathways get connected. And so you actually do get a sense of control over that area of your body. This is what we do with a little bit of body awareness. It's also great just before you go to bed at night, when you're going to sleep. You lay down there and you just relax every part of your body. Just sweep right through it. Don't spend too much time, but just sweep right through the body. Making everything nice and relaxed as best you can. Asking each part, are you comfortable, are you comfortable, are you comfortable? Relaxing until you get to the top of your head. All the rotten things which happened to you today, sweep it out of the hole and then close your hole up. And then go to your face, relax the face, and then just smile before you go to sleep. You smile before you go to sleep, you always have good dreams. If you grimace before you go to sleep, you're going to have nightmares. You're going to have terrible dreams. Because what you go to sleep with, what you take into your sleep, that's what you have to carry throughout the whole night. And that can sometimes make you sort of have those terrible dreams. Have the terrible dream. Was that a fellow thought it was in a Chinese laundry last night? Because that is what you take that into dream. You get upset about somebody turning on the bath taps. If you get upset and you go to sleep with that, of course you're going to take that into your dream, that's going to be you for the whole night. If you take like forgiveness or kindness or peace into your dreams, then you just dream peaceful dreams. Sometimes I have some really great dreams, especially if you get to deep meditation. You can actually get these amazing dreams when you get into deep meditation. So because you know, then sort of you, as you left, you know, the sentient world to get into sleep, that's what you take with you. You really have fun. I started now, but I'll sort of say a few things. I remember this dreaming about this psychic battle I had with a Hindu. Really great, sort of in your dreams, you know, flying through the air, the psychic battle. It was really good stuff. Much better than any movie. They get all sorts of things like that in your dreams, and it's good fun. So anyway, this is some of the things you can do. But just calm the mind down. Of course, the next thing, meditation, which is one of the really wonderful meditations. Mentioned it in brief, but now we really get into it. We've got the time. It's loving kindness meditation. Good old metta. And that's something which each one of us can do, should do, has to do. Loving kindness is just softening your mind. There's loving kindness towards all sentient beings and all insentient beings as well. A loving kindness towards your cushion. This little cushion which has been propping you up for all these days. Have you been kind to it? Oh, you love your little cushion. You're so kind, don't you? Such a lot of good work for me over these past few days. If you give loving kindness to your cushion, then when you sit on it, it could be a different ball game. You know, you actually get a sense of softness and kindness. It's sort of quite nice. When you have that degree of softness in your mind, you're starting meditation with the right attitude. You can be loving kindness, obviously, to all sentient beings. When you soften your mind to all beings in this world, especially those beings on this retreat, it's impossible to get angry. You know, the person in front of you who's eaten too much beans. It's impossible to get angry at the person who actually turns on the tap. It's impossible to get angry at anybody for doing anything when you have lots of loving kindness. And isn't it wonderful to be free of all that anger towards other people, including yourself? So what you're doing here, instead of looking at that which you find fault with, you're looking at all the good qualities in the other people, in your cushion, in life, in everything. So you're softening the heart. You see that many people are so hard, so prickly. They're so prickly that, you know, somebody just does the slightest thing and they get really upset. That's a terrible state of mind to be in, because there's always something going wrong in the world. So instead of actually being prickly, we get so soft. Instead of being brittle and hard, we become just like this, you know, soft sponge. People can punch you and you just, it doesn't hurt, you don't break, you don't bruise even, because you're so relaxed and open, so loose. May all beings in the world be happy and well. There's many ways of doing loving kindness meditation, and I'm sure that you've read many types of loving kindness meditation. The one I like to do, which we'll do at the end of this retreat, and I'll go over it in more detail there, is try to find some object which makes it very easy to feel love towards. And many of you know that I choose a kitten, because I'm like a cat person. But I had an imaginary kitten, because it's very hard sometimes to find a real one. And when it's an imaginary one, you can make it any which way you want. So I imagine, when I do loving kindness meditation, a small, homeless, frightened, lonely, hungry, desperate little kitten. I try and make it as desperate and as lonely and as afraid, as hungry as I possibly can. It's almost like imagine its bones poking through its fur. And just, you know, being so afraid because it's had such a rotten life so far. And just try to find it. And I've got the opportunity of looking after that little kid. Only me. If I don't look after it, that poor little kid, born in fear, will die in pain. No way will I allow that. So imagine just all of that kindness, that loving softness inside of you, just reaching out so gently. You don't want to make that kitten any more afraid. So gently. Just touching it ever so lightly. Just a touch of Christ. A touch of saying, I will never hurt you. And just picking up that little kitten. I like keeping eye contact with it. Imagine those big kitten eyes, full of fear, and turning that fear into trust, and just bringing that little kitten to your chest, and warming it with your warmth, feeding it with your strength, and saying, little kitten, as long as I'm around, you have nothing to fear. I will feed you, look after you, care for you, the rest of your days. Now you can see just the softness which starts to come up in the mind. That's just so nice, it's so lovely. And you really get into this, you indulge in it to the limit. And you can play with that commentary, make up your own commentary. If it's not a little kitten, you can use a little puppy. If not a little puppy, a baby. If it's not a little baby, a little plant growing outside, needs nurturing, it's not a little plant. You're nurturing it along. Whatever it is, which is very easy to have feelings of love towards, especially if it's imaginary. Because imagination gives more freedom actually to move it this way and that. And when you start to get these feelings of tenderness, care, loving kindness, then you just pause. Instead of looking at the object, you're looking at the person watching it. The relationship you have between the two. And then you feel, this is so nice, this is so lovely. That's loving kindness. The words are there to get the feeling. Once you've got the feeling, you can leave the words aside. You've got the feeling of loving kindness. In silent awareness, you know how beautiful it is to have metta. Compassion. The warmth. The giving, not expecting anything back in return. Contentment. Just happy just to be with this little kid and your friend. Spend hours just enjoying each other's company. Needing nothing more than just being with that thing. And just with a sense of freedom. So here you've got all the ingredients for the path of meditation. And it's also, you've got the happiness as well. Sometimes the breath is weak because unless you're really skillful, it doesn't come up with the same feeling of happiness and joy, which loving kindness brings up. Now when you have loving kindness, it just feels good. Whatever you love gives you happiness. Sometimes the breath doesn't give you enough happiness, which is why it gets still but it doesn't get the oomph behind it. So you do a bit of loving kindness and it gives you this beautiful feeling of warmth, uplift, happiness. Oh, you can stay like this for hours and hours and hours, enjoying every moment of it. So build it up with something easy. Now if you want to actually spread that loving kindness to other beings, then you can replace the image. But here, just stay that, do that much. Just bring up loving kindness, the feeling, until it gets really, really, really strong. And then you can actually put it on your breath. This little breath. Sometimes it hasn't got much attention, it just feeds you your life for all these years. This breath has been looking after you. Have you ever looked after it? Said thank you for giving me life. Sometimes this breath is so hungry, so lonely. So take this breath and give it loving kindness. A beautiful little breath. Been looking after me for so long. Sometimes I force you in, I force you out. I make you have to struggle when I'm working hard, when I run out of breath. Now I will be so kind to you. You have this beautiful feeling of warmth towards the breath. It becomes so easy to watch the breath. It's so nice. Just playing with your favourite toy, your favourite little kitten. Playing the breath this way, that way. Stroking it, seeing the breath purr. Beautiful. Now if you can combine loving kindness with the breath, you're all going to go very, very deep. And you get lovely meditation. So easy, just bliss out. Have a wonderful time. So it's giving that happiness towards the meditation. Another type thing you should do with loving kindness meditation before you spend it to other people is to you. Just have that little kitten that's lonely and desperate. Usually after 3 or 4 days of meditation, many of you are lonely and very desperate. You're hungry because you've got eating in the evening. Bones are sticking out. So you take yourself into your arms. Imagine yourself. Take it into your arms. And just sort of give yourself some warmth, some care. Say, look, me, as long as I'm around, you've got nothing to worry about. Give yourself that beautiful sense of freedom and love. The door of my heart is open to me. But don't be so hard on yourself and say, I'm hopeless, I'm terrible, 3 or 4 days and I can't even stay in the present moment yet, let alone sort of nimittas and jhanas. Oh my goodness, they're far ahead of me, I'm really hopeless. I can't even keep quiet, I sleep too much, I eat too much, I'm really hopeless. You know, sometimes I feel in walk meditation, just go inside there and just, you know, think sexual fantasies or dreams or whatever, I don't know what I'm doing. Be kind to yourself, that's good enough. So the doors of my heart is open to me, no matter who I am, no matter what I've done. In this retreat, just know marks given. You don't have to live up to anything. There's nothing to succeed at. This whole idea of this retreat is being at peace, accepting oneself in the moment, not striving, not doing, not struggling, just allowing yourself to be. And allow that beingness that is to take you into peace, rather than forcing yourself into peace. So give yourself 100% loving kindness, 100% acceptance. I don't know who your mother was or how your mother was, but imagine the perfect mother. Sometimes you go out there, and I used to go and play soccer and fall over. And so be in so much pain, you know, blood go down your leg and something, and all the mother would do was just, oh, you poor thing, give it one kiss. Give all those germs from her mouth. And it'll get better. Every time, and kiss it better, that's what she used to say. And every time, used to, straight away the pain would go away, and it would heal up. And of course, you understand why. Just because of that kindness and that warmth, that love. That's all it needs. So, you know, if you've got a little ache or pain in your head or in your life, just kiss it better. You know, metaphorically speaking. Just to say, oh, it's okay. And give yourself that warmth, that acceptance, that love, that freedom. And you find the pain disappears. So whatever that pain is, disappointment, frustration, not living up to your expectations, whatever it is, just leave it alone. Kiss it better with loving kindness. And the whole thing becomes free. And when you're free, you're not trying to do anything, you're not trying to live up to anyone's expectations, you feel you're accepted, whatever happens in this retreat is good enough. Then everything starts to happen all by itself. When you least expect it, when you don't try, when you don't want it, when you don't have to have it, then you get everything. Because that's the nature of nirvana. Nirvana comes from letting go, from being at peace, from freeing the mind. The nature of the mind, you put it down, it's still. If you're kind to it, happiness comes. And from that happiness, you develop all of the deep meditation. Naturally, without force. So those are some meditations I was teaching today. I think I've got most of them today. Started off with doing some counting meditation, if you want to play around with that. Also doing it backwards, not one while breathing in, one breathing in, two breathing out, two. It's breathing out one, then breathing in one, breathing out two, breathing in two. Just a complicated thing. And that's some fun. Then I did, what was the next one I did? I was walking meditation, no, body meditation. Feeling all the parts of the body, being kind to all parts of the body, including your toes, going right up, little by little, to the top of your head, opening the top of your head, sweeping all the rubbish out, then closing up again. And just going to the front of the face, and ending with a smile. And then we did, the next one, walking meditation, doing that very calmly and peacefully. And then we did, after all, loving kindness meditation. So you've got so many different things. Variety is a spice of life. And my goodness, there's not enough time in this retreat to do everything. Oh, there's so much stuff to be done. It's so busy. So busy, you've got not enough time to think or to worry about what's going to happen later on. So go out there and enjoy all these different flavours of meditation on the menu today. So any questions? Yeah, go on.
The body meditation.
Yeah.
Is it fair to say that when the mind has got the taints in it, like anger or ill, all those sorts of things, that there will be some expression of that in the body in terms of a holding, a harshness, or this or that? Can you use a combination of love and kindness to tackle emotional issues in the mind through the body, bringing like a sense of softness? Or because usually often once you find like certain items, you speak or something, parts of my body are like, they'll be loose in other parts, and then there'll be like a harshness in the chest or something like that.
Correct, yeah. Whenever you have one of those really strong emotions like guilt or fear or anger or jealousy, all those types of emotions, it will have a corresponding sensation in the body. But by focusing on that sensation, it does two things. First of all, it shows you how much you're torturing yourself, how much anger or jealousy is actually physically hurting and creating tension and tightness there. And you can also understand from that just how people do get sick. Keep that too tight long enough, and so it's going to break. Too much fear, too much tension, too much jealousy, whatever, well, actually it will hurt you eventually. The second thing, especially with those emotions I just mentioned, all those emotions are triggered by the other person out there. You're angry because of her or because of him, or you're jealous because of them, or you're afraid because of that thing over there. And when you take your attention from that, away from that trigger, and you go to the feeling, then actually you cut off the fuel supply for anger. So you feel what that anger's like inside, and you can't stay angry very long. That was like Ajahn Chah's wonderful trick. Ajahn Chah used to think in just really weird and strange ways. That's why he's just a great person to live with. It's very funny. When he was asked by a person when he was visiting England, got too much anger, what should I do with anger? I can't get rid of it. And what he said was, don't try to get rid of it. What I've been saying here. Next time you get angry, sit down, put a clock in front of you, and just see how long you'll be angry for. See if you can beat your record. That's actually absolutely brilliant advice. Because not only was it funny because it was that strange, but first of all, you weren't trying to get rid of the anger. Because if you try to get rid of the anger, that's number one problem. You get angry at being angry. So number one, you're not trying to get rid of it. You're just seeing how long you can be angry for. You're actually going in the opposite direction. Or it's almost like you're trying to be angry. And number two, you're looking at the clock rather than the source of your anger. It's not him, because what you said earlier, what you did. And when you're not focusing on that source, but you're focusing on just the clock and the time and having anger, you can't be angry very long. The only way you can keep being angry is thinking about what happened to you. And they did this, they did that, they shouldn't have done that. And that feeds anger. If you're looking at the clock, see how long you can be angry for, you can't think that way. And soon just the anger just disappears. And you find out one of the two causes of anger. One, you try and control it, you want to get rid of it, and that's where anger starts from, being a controller. Now you're trying to control anger, you're getting angry at being angry. You're trying to get rid of it. And number two, you're focusing on the cause, the trigger, again and again. He did this, they shouldn't have done that, why did they do that? They've got no right to do that, it's not proper to do that, they shouldn't have done that. You're always focusing on the cause. And you make yourself angry. You take away the focus by doing these silly methods like watching a clock. You can't be angry anymore. It just disappears very quickly. So the next time you're angry, get your clock out, sit down, see if you can beat your record. Brilliant piece of advice. Or you can watch your body. Because you're watching the body, you're not watching the trigger for the anger. And then eventually you forget why you're angry. No point anymore. Okay. Any other question? Okay, so you've got a lot to do today. Lots of things going on, so get out there, walking meditation. Sometimes just don't know where you're going to go, one at a time, see what happens, where you end up. And people are actually amazing when they do that meditation, they usually end up in the kitchen. Mike was a great psychologist. lots of meditation to do. Those are interviews this morning. I did have the list for them. So what the list is. If a couple of people have crossed their names out, then you just jump ahead of them. So it's a nice orderly sequence of people coming for interviews. So have a nice morning.